always trust you.
We ask the questions.
What is needed in the world?
Is that going to be?
It's 1 year until the FIFA Football World Cup in Qatar, the first ever to be staged in the Middle East. It's a source of great pride for this small country of nearly 3 million, which hopes the most popular sporting event across the globe will create a lasting legacy for the region. But since winning the bid to host football's biggest competition, Qatar's been under the spotlight over human rights issues, including the plight of migrant workers and its ability to host such a large-scale event. So, in preparation for the World Cup, it's been holding a test tournament, the first ever FIFA Arab Cup, which has seen 16 teams compete for the region's most prestigious trophy. So, is Qatar ready? I'm Fully Batibo. Welcome to this special edition of Talk to Al Jazeera. Joining us in our Doha waterfront studio is the most powerful woman in international sports. Senegal's Fatma Samoura made history in 2016 when she became the first ever female Secretary General of football's world governing body and the first non-European. We'll be talking to her about her journey and the road to Qatar 2022. Stay with us as Fatma Samoura, FIFA's Secretary General, talks to Al Jazeera. Fatma Samoura, Secretary General of FIFA, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera.
My pleasure, Folly, to be here.
1 year from now, the FIFA World Cup 2022 will kick off here in Qatar. Is the country ready? How satisfied is FIFA with the progress of preparations?
Well, I think that it will be the first time in the history, I think, of the World Cup that a country hosting it is ready 1 year ahead of the kickoff. And from what we have been experiencing over the past few days with the staging of the FIFA Arab Cup, which is using six of the eight stadiums that will be hosting the first World Cup in the Middle East, I can say that FIFA is very impressed by the level of operational readiness of Qatar, and definitely the country will be ready well ahead of time to welcome the 1.7 to 2 million hosts and visitors and football lovers who are expected to visit the country.
Yes, the Arab Cup, which you've been attending, has been really a test tournament for this World Cup. If you were to give an assessment, a grade, on things like venues, atmosphere, overall organization, what would it be? Where is Qatar doing things right? And where do you think there's still room for some improvement?
Well, I think that in terms of the infrastructure, the stadiums, the training site, the accommodation, I don't think we can compare Qatar with any country. They have been, I think, the best in terms of hosting.
Where is there room for improvement, you think?
But I think in the transportation, we're still facing some challenges. People need to find their way. Because of the compact nature of this World Cup, we really want the fans to leave the country with the best experience. And it will never be again the same for them. Because with this World Cup, fully, you can watch two games. And if you are lucky enough, and really if the transportation, you are familiar with the metro, you can even watch two, three games.
But there were a few hiccups, Fatma Samoura, at the start of this Arab Cup, notably with the fan ID card. A lot of fans having difficulty having access to this card and getting into the stadiums. It was eventually scrapped. I know, you know, you've been FIFA Secretary General and you were in Russia in 2018 as well. You've seen what other countries have done. If there was one advice you would give to the Qatari organizers today to make things a bit more smoother for fans, as you say, what would it be?
Well, let me just come back to the fan ID that was introduced for the first time for FIFA competition in Russia back in 2018. Mm-hmm. Well, I think for good reason, because of security issues, because of hooliganism, also because we wanted to make it smooth for everyone, the authorities in Russia imposed the fan ID. But the fan ID was also a tool that was used to replace the visa application, because with a fan ID, you could access the country without having to go through the visa application. Since 2018, many things have changed, and we have now new requirement in terms of health. People need to have an ETRAS also
code
when they come here.
The COVID-19 pandemic makes things a bit more complicated,
you need a PCR
it?
Test. Mm-hmm. You need also to show that you are fully vaccinated. And adding all those additional requirements did not make it easy for people who were first and foremost here to watch the game and easy access. So I think the authorities in Qatar took the best decision and the right decision to remove it temporarily. But I'm sure with what we have learned over during this Arab World Cup, next year will be easier.
Right. Now, there's been some concern about Qatar not having enough hotels and rooms, affordable accommodation for those coming to watch the World Cup. Is that a concern that FIFA still has?
It may still be a concern if we receive more foreigners than people who have a house in Qatar. And I think this is also something that the FIFA COE 2022 under the joint venture is taking very seriously. Mm. I think the level of availability is okay. Mm-hmm. We don't have any problem, for example.
But affordability also. Will it be affordable for fans who are coming from all over
the world? I think
the
prices are quite reasonable. I've been in many countries where the euro, for example, was staged where the hotel rate was much, much higher than what we are seeing here. So I don't think the problem is a problem of affordability. Mm-hmm. It's rather the number of rooms we need for our guests, especially for our executive guests, that may pose the challenges and for the sponsor. But it's a work in progress. And I'm sure that the Qataris and especially the Supreme Committee are trying to find all possible ways, including having some cruise boat here. Mm-hmm. And this will be also something that we're looking into with them.
Right. Fatma Samoura, with every World Cup comes a controversy. It's been the case in South Africa, in Russia. And Qatar has been under a lot of scrutiny for the plight of migrant workers. Since the tournament was awarded to the country in 2010, rights groups have denounced the condition of migrant workers who've worked on the construction of World Cup stadiums, on transport infrastructure for the World Cup as well, hotels. And Amnesty International, I quote here, has said, FIFA is as responsible for the welfare of workers as the state of Qatar. So what has FIFA done about this? How are you working with Qatari organizers to make sure that conditions are good and safe?
Well, let me come back to 2016 when FIFA adopted a range of reform. Under our current FIFA status, especially under Article 3, we decided and we committed to promote and to protect all human rights as part of our responsibility and as part of my responsibility as a FIFA Secretary General in charge of the administration, and also for Gianni Infantino, the president of FIFA, we take it very seriously. Mm-hmm. The first thing that Gianni did after his visit to Qatar back in 2016 was to put in place a human rights advisory board to preempt all the issues with regard to human rights. And they made a number of recommendations. And by 2017, 85% of those recommendations were fully implemented for Russia. And the same level of recommendations were made in Qatar. And I can say that, yes, human rights is a problem everywhere. It's not specific to Qatar. When our children from Africa are drowning in the Mediterranean and in the Atlantic, nobody is pointing fingers the country that signed the Vienna Convention but that refused them access just for their human dignity. The government and the authorities here in Qatar have taken the migrant workers' situation very seriously. I think one of the key highlights was the abolition of the kafala system. Today, fully, we have 400,000 workers in this country that have received higher salary. because the minimum salary that was is now imposed for all workers in this country. We continue with the international bodies, such as the International Labour Office, such as the building woodworkers, but also with the Centre for Sport and Human Rights to monitor the situation. On a regular basis, the accommodation of the migrant workers have been visited to make sure that they live in dignity in the compound. Yes, it's a long-term process to be up to the level of some countries, but I think that already Qatar is being seen as a source of inspiration for other countries in the Arab Gulf country.
How much more still needs to be done, in your view?
Well, there are many things to be done everywhere, but I can't say that...
But specifically about this, because, it, you know, constantly this is what comes up. The workers' rights in Qatar, as soon as the World Cup is talked about...
But the human nature beings by nature are always critical. What I'm asking people to do is first to relate to the report that was not produced by FIFA, but that was produced by these human rights bodies who are working here permanently. And to also look and hear from the people who are currently attending the FIFA Arab Cup if they have any issues, whether it's on LGBT or on the faiths of the migrant workers.
Yes, well, let's
and
get
not,
to LGBT.
And not only to focus on what the social media are reporting.
Right, you mentioned LGBTQ rights, and the World Cup, as we know, has been known to bring people together regardless of their background, of their race, of their religion, sexual orientation. And homosexuality is outlawed here, of course, as in many other countries in this region. And we saw Lewis Hamilton recently at the Formula One Grand Prix wear a rainbow helmet to basically draw attention to LGBTQ rights. What can FIFA tell today to fans who are LGBTQ and who want to come to the World Cup in Qatar? Are they going to be safe?
Well, first, we welcome everybody. It's part of FIFA mandate to make that all the World Cup are inclusive. And this is something that we don't negotiate. It is something that is built in the building process for any country that bid to host the World Cup. People will be welcome. And this is also the message we are getting from authorities here in Qatar. We need to respect also the people's conviction. We are here for the joy, and football being the biggest equalizer and unifier in the world, I'm very sure that everybody will be welcome. We faced the same issues 4 years ago, 3 years ago in 2018 in Russia, where they were also, some media outlets, especially the Western media, were very critical about the position of the Russian authorities toward people with different sexual orientation. But we've seen it, everything went smoothly. And I'm sure the same thing will happen here.
Now, there are rules around alcohol consumption here, which will be available to fans in designated areas. But what about advertising? Many significant sponsors of the World Cup are alcohol producers. How is FIFA working around this?
Well, as part of our commercial deals, we need also to respect our commitment towards the sponsor. Mm-hmm. We're still in constant dialogue with them to make sure that people who want really to drink alcohol can drink it.
The World Cup is in a year. Your boss, Gianni Infantino, the FIFA president, says a World Cup every 2 years is needed instead of every 4 years. He says this is necessary to safeguard the future of the sports. But there's been a lot of opposition to this, Fatma Samoura, especially from European countries. What is your view? Why do we need a World Cup every 2 years?
My view is that we have to open a dialogue. The football ecosystem needs to be reformed. And definitely there is a big gap, as you know, fully between the European football and the rest of the world. And this should not continue. This cannot be continued.
We're holding
the
a World Cup every
for,
2 years.
For other
will
countries.
That solve that issue? I mean,
definitely,
is it feasible to hold a World Cup every 2 years?
It is feasible.
But, okay, what do you say to critics who say this is all about money in the end, that FIFA's wanting to...
Well, but we need money to run football.
Yeah.
We need money to...
So it's not just about the fans and the experience also, it's about money, right?
Yeah, but you need money to run football. Do you think that the Euro is organized just for fun? Or the European Champions League is just for fun? This competition are generating billions of dollars.
So how do you convince European countries to come on board?
The only way that I convince them is compare where we took the member association before 2015 and now. Before 2015, our 211 member association was receiving a maximum of 300,000 per year. Today, each of them receive $1.5 million. If you see the number of infrastructure built using the FIFA forward money, it's because you were able to generate additional money that does not end in the pocket of few people, but that goes to football.
Now, speaking of money that sometimes end up in the pockets of just a few people, corruption is an issue, was an issue in FIFA
no,
in
no.
2015. Well, let me get to it. You came in under Gianni Infantino, of course, and there was a massive clear out of the old guard under former president Sepp Blatter. And FIFA has hailed this as a new era, an era free of corruption. And Gianni Infantino says FIFA is clean and corrupt-free today. And it's true that earlier this year in 2021, the U.S. Justice Department remitted some of the funds that it had blocked to FIFA related to the 2015 scandal. But are you confident that FIFA has cleaned house?
Well, I can only speak about the FIFA administration, yes, because we have put in place a system that does not allow anybody just to take the money. You don't see the money. You just put click on buttons. So the fact that we are a zero cash disbursement agency makes the things very easy.
But there's still shortcomings, especially when it comes to the national federations.
The national federations.
We've seen this in Africa, for example.
Yes, but before Gianni took up its duty, only 40, I'm not forgetting 40%, only 40 of our member association were going through a central review. Since 2017, 100% of our member association that receive FIFA funding go through a financial scrutiny, meaning we report for every single penny we receive and we disburse in favor of our member association.
But there are still some suspicious dealings in African football, for example, Fatma Samora, and you were actually appointed to clean up African football. What have you achieved? What's been done?
Well,
so
there
far?
Were many recommendations. As you know, my mission ended after 6 months, and today I'm quite confident with the presence of the President Motsepe at the helm of CAF Confederation and also of Veron Mosenge Omba, who also worked under me, has a new secretary of CAF, that very soon CAF will be also a very clean house.
But how do you deal with political interference in football? Because that has been one of the main issues.
We don't see it anymore. That's why you've seen also so many countries sometime being under normalization committee, because when the government interfered, we dialogue with them to tell them that there should not be any interference. And we are not hesitating to suspend some countries where really we have insurance that there are corruptions and also that there is undue interference of the government.
Another problem with African football is the underdevelopment of the game on the continent. The best players are going to play in Europe. They've been exploited, some would say, by European clubs. What is FIFA doing to develop football on the continent? And there's been talk about getting rid of the old guard when it comes to football governing bodies on the African continent, the associations on the continent, the old guards, like our presidents, I guess, like some of the presidents who are still holding on. How do you bring about change? We've seen Samuel Eto'o recently elected as the president of Cameroonian football, but it's an exception.
It's not an exception. I can tell you that 90% of the president of the Football Federation in Africa are much younger than you and I.
but it's very rare to see a footballer taking the lead, being in the administration. Is that how it should be then?
We have former football players who are president of their country, and George Weah is one of them.
Exactly.
And
do you think that's the way to go, to bring up this new generation? Well, would that help?
Well, definitely. If the level of experience on the pitch and off the pitch is equal, why not?
Let's talk about your personal journey, Fatma Samoura. You're the first female Secretary General of FIFA. Coming from a non-football background, you work at the United Nations, as you've said, for a long time, and you landed in a middle-aged, white, European man's world. What was that like for you? What is it like being a woman of color, in a male-dominated, Europe-centric world?
Well, I think that when I was appointed and my picture was displayed in Mexico in May 2016, many people have been were shocked. But I think that Gianni took the right decision because his discourse was that he wanted to inject diversity. I think prior to 2015, ethnicity and gender parity were not really the priority of the former FIFA administration. Today, really, I'm proud to be leading an administration where 43% are women, with 63 different nationalities working in FIFA headquarters. And my appointment should not be looked at as an isolated case, because since my appointment, we have three women who are now sitting on the management board of FIFA, and one of them is in charge of the women football division, which is also a premier.
But were there any difficulties going into to this boys' club for you? What are some of the challenges that you encountered earlier?
Well, fully, I've always worked in a male-dominated organization because throughout my career in the UN, I was always being assigned in non-family and hardship duty station. So working in a male-dominated organization was not an issue. The issue was first to change the perception that football is a universal language and FIFA is an international body like the UN. And it took me more time to convince the people in Zurich, my own people, that yes, we need to have more ethnicity within FIFA. But today I think it's
Do you feel like you had to work twice as hard as a woman and as a black woman?
But it's not only in football. It's like you. The moment you are a woman, no matter your color, you have to work twice as much. Yes, there are people who are still thinking that as an African woman, I should not be in football. But I really don't focus on those kind of nonsense. So for football, my fight was to make sure that the balls continue rolling and that football is played everywhere, and definitely that with 50% of football fans being women.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that.
Women in football.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because there are a lot of countries advocating for equal pay within women's and men's team. The U.S. Women Football World Cup champions have even gone to court over this to try and get equal pay for footballers. So where does FIFA stand on this equal pay an equal prize issue? There's still a huge disparity in prize money.
Well, there is a huge disparity. I'm not saying that this is right, but the Men's World Cup started fully in 1930. Mm-hmm. The Women's World Cup started in 91, so 61 years later. Today, until the French World Cup, it was the Men's World Cup that was funding all the other competition of FIFA. And yes, we had some issues with the prize money, but just a figure. During the last World Cup before France in 2015, the prize money for the Women's World Cup was 15 million. In 2019, it was multiplied by 3 to 50 million. And I'm sure that by the time we reach New Zealand and Australia, for the 9th edition of the FIFA Women World Cup, there will be more money injected into the women game. Mm-hmm. We have allocated under the cycle 2019-2022 for the first time also in the history $1.5 billion to the women football.
But FIFA has been very reluctant to rock the boat on this issue of prize money. What do you respond to?
No, it's not being hesitant. We need the World Cup to be sustainable. Once we can sell the World Cup the Women World Cup as a standalone product, which has already started with its 9th edition that will be staged in New Zealand and Australia in 2 years, then we have the money to increase the prize money. But as I told you today, it's difficult because it's the Men's World Cup that is funding all the others. The Men's World Cup bring money. The other competition costs money. So we need to make those other competitions as financially sustainable by promoting it. And this is what we have started. We are not selling now the right as a bundled product. We want to separate and to have the real value of the Women World Cup. And from what we have been seeing over the past 3 years, the trend is very soon the Women World Cup will bring money, maybe not to the level of the men's for the next decade, but very close to that. And at that moment, we can talk about equal pay.
Fatma Samora, FIFA Secretary General, thank you very much for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thank you to you, Walid. My pleasure.